All right, everybody, welcome back to Cinema Theology. My name is David Cortez, and here is with me is Josias Flores.
Hi, everyone. Glad to be back.
All right, so most of you might have heard already our podcast talking about Infinity War, but we mentioned that that's a two-part podcast, kind of like Infinity War and Endgame, like the same movie, just in two different parts. So today we're going to talk about Avengers Endgame.
Oh, Endgame.
Oh, yes. Oh, man. We got a lot to talk about
today.
Such
a hyped up movie, man.
Oh, no, I think it's crazy. I would be inclined to say that it was the most anticipated movie of all time.
Of all time? Wow, even more than, what was that, the Star Wars sequel? What was it? I can't believe Empire Strikes Back. You think even more than Empire Strikes Back?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I think way more, actually.
Okay, all right.
If you look at the box office, opening weekend box office, Endgame broke it by like $100 million in the U.S.
It was insane. I mean, they just did it so well, Marvel, with 10 years of buildup, 11 years of buildup. I mean, that's amazing.
And I think Infinity War made in total $1.3 billion in like its entire theatrical run. And Endgame made that in 10 days.
That's crazy.
In fact, I remember.
I think it's fair to say that this will go down in history. Easy, this movie goes down in history as a social phenomenon.
Definitely. Like, I remember like 2 weeks after it came out, I was listening to ads on Spotify. It wasn't like, go see Endgame. It was go see Endgame again. Because basically everybody had already been seeing it. And, you know, I was right along with everybody. I saw it on opening Thursday night at a local theater. Super excited. It's one of the most interactive, like, audience movie experiences. You know, there's certain scenes in the movie where people just cheer. There's one scene where there's this title card that just says New Jersey, and I live in New Jersey, and everybody got up and cheered.
Oh, everybody got crazy. Yeah.
So that was fun. It was a fun theater experience.
Man, I believe it. We've grown with these characters, and by we, I mean the collective worldwide audience for 10 years, 11 years. And so it was bound to happen. I mean, like, we've never seen anything like it, and what Marvel has done, and I don't know that we'll ever see it again. We'll see. I'm sure some others will try. But it was definitely a culmination of something amazing, and understandably, the movie delivered, I think.
I think it definitely did deliver. What are your feelings on Endgame overall?
Listen, overall, I like the movie. I gotta say, I like the movie, but I don't know, especially on like second and third watchings, I just felt like it wasn't as impactful as the first time I watched it. I feel like it was slower paced, and I'm not a huge fan of time travel in movies, especially when it's back to things that we've already seen, and so I wasn't super keen on that. It was nice to see some new elements right in the history. They didn't exactly repeat everything. They kind of gave a new angle on history. Of the history of the MCU, the Marvel Cinematic Universe. But at the same time, I don't know, it's just, I think Infinity War for me was a better movie, and Endgame doesn't stand alone as well. But having said that, I really enjoyed it, and I'm probably going to continue to watch it into the future and just analyze and see so much detail that was poured into it, right? Like so many little themes and Easter eggs and all these other things that we're probably going to be dissecting for a long time. And so I'm excited to be part of that process for sure. What about you? What do you think?
For me, I like Endgame actually better than Infinity War. Although I do think that Infinity War is better as a film, I think. There's like some tact, and I think it flows better than Endgame. But what I like, really like in Endgame, that it is a very character-driven movie, whereas Infinity War felt more like, you know, action scene and then some downtime. Thanos is coming. Oh, another fight scene, then another fight scene. It felt like a lot of like chess piece moving storytelling, where this one felt like it was more focused on the characters. And really, the characters are what make all the. I felt very fulfilled at the end of Endgame.
And I can agree with that. Yeah, definitely more character development, but I like Infinity War in that it developed relationships more than individual characters. So it pit up against each other different characters that we'd seen in the MCU that were never together, and then just kind of explored what it would be like and fleshed out those relationships. And I really enjoyed that in Infinity War. Endgame has some of that, but it's not as impactful at second time around, I think. And it has less so of like smaller teams. And so I don't know, that didn't hit me as much. I wish they'd done more with Captain Marvel myself. I feel like that was a wasted opportunity there. But at the end of the day, there's so many characters that it's hard to explore every single one in a short movie like that.
All right. So I know we have a lot to get into today. Should we bother summarizing the movie?
Go for it, man. What's your synopsis?
All right, my synopsis. So after Thanos obliterated 50% of all living beings in the universe and at the end of the Infinity War, the Avengers are trying to deal with the loss. I would say this movie is split into three sections. The first hour of this movie is basically all about loss and depression and guilt. Second part of the movie is like a kind of like a Back to the Future 2 type of movie where they go into previous Marvel movies to recover the Infinity Stones from the past. And the third is like this giant battle, which is glorious. And I don't think we give a spoiler warning, although I think we just spoiled the entire movie for everybody. But
That's spoilers, by the way. Yeah.
Spoilers, by the way.
Some of the biggest things we have not spoiled yet. So, again, if that was too much for you, spoiler alert, it's probably going to get even more spoily if that's a word. And so check out the movie if you want to continue to understand. If you don't care about spoilers, then feel free. Or if you watch the movie, feel free to keep listening to us. Glad to have you. Listen, man, did you notice how the movie started with a big fake out? You remember this? Hawkeye is just like playing with his daughter, teaching him how to like shoot an arrow. Like they're having a picnic, a family picnic. It's so nice. You're like, oh, this is going to be a nice film. You know, this is cool. This is like family. And then like he turns around and his daughter just evaporates into dust. And it's just like, what? Why would you do that? And then it just like becomes super grim. Like the tone of the movie completely changes and just fakes you out. And I love that, actually. I was like, played.
That was a great opening. Like a great opening scene.
Yeah.
So, Jose, I don't know if you remember, but back when this movie came out back in, I think, April, as I said, I went to go see it on opening Thursday night. And I think the next morning I texted you like, Josias, have you seen it?
Yes.
And you told me you had it and I told you, go see it. And like, but kind of be thinking about, you know, the second coming, the millennium, that type of stuff as you're going back into it.
You prime my mind. So I don't usually like watching movies on opening night because of the crowds. Like, I'm not the type of person who's going to reserve a ticket in advance, right? I just like to kind of go spur of the moment. Let's go watch a movie right now. And usually, you know, opening weekends, you can't do that, especially for a big movie like this. And so I said, I'm just going to wait it out. I'll watch it in like a week or something. And I did. And you had primed my mind with that. And like I said last episode, dude, especially in the third act, I was low-key scared because I saw like Adventist theology and eschatology, which is basically the way that we narrate the end time events, like played out on screen in kind of like a twisted way. And I was just like, whoa, you know, like I'm used to seeing superhero movies draw from biblical themes, but I'm not used to seeing superhero movies draw from Adventist interpretation of biblical themes. That kind of scared me a little bit.
That is, and I was like, that is true, because you know, there are certain things that Christians believe in common, such as like the divinity of Jesus or the Trinity for most denominations, but very few Christian denominations believe what Adventists believe in terms of what's going to happen at the end times. And we kind of saw that reflected here. Could you elaborate a little bit more on that?
Yeah, man. So the crazy thing is, okay, so let me just, I have to like quickly summarize Adventist eschatology.
Yes, please.
And again, if I, you know, if you think I don't do a good job or don't do a service, feel free to correct me, whether it's you, Dido, or someone listening. And I'm okay with that, right? I'm not an expert in prophecy, although I am a pastor and I have studied some of these things. So, okay, basically Adventist, you know, we believe, obviously, just like other Christians, that Jesus came, was real, you know, as a human being. He lived a perfect, sinless life where he showed God's character to people and then died on the cross for our sins. Very good. Before he left, he promised his disciples that he would come again, that he would return, and that he was going to prepare a place for them in his Father's house. This is John 14. And then he's going to come again and pick them up, basically, and take them with him to live with him. Very good. And so this is where you know, already the second coming idea. This is where a lot of Christian denominations differ, especially from Adventism. And so Adventists believe, because as we read Revelation and understand that there's going to be a thousand year period where the saved, those who chose Jesus and have a relationship with him, are going to be in heaven with God, with Jesus, living with him for 1,000 years, while here on earth, everyone is going to have died except for Satan, and he's not going to have anyone to whom he can attempt anymore. All right, well, during those 1,000 years, then after those 1,000 years are done, we understand that God is going to bring down the new Jerusalem from heaven down to earth, and he's going to establish his new kingdom for the universe here on earth, and he's going to create all things new, and he's going to destroy Satan. And at that moment, everyone who's ever lived, the wicked, so to speak, is going to rise again, you know, wake up from the dead, and they're going to recognize God as being fair and as being just and being right in what he does. Mm-hmm. And then they're all going to perish when God creates a new world, right? And so this is the idea of Adventist eschatology. And again, correct me if that is wrong or if I missed something.
But just one question. What is Satan doing that entire time?
He's supposed to be just like kind of just like roaming around the earth, and he doesn't have anyone to tempt.
He has no power. He has no, you know.
Exactly. He's bound to earth. He's like chained up to earth basically, and there's no one around, so he's just kind of there. Anyway, so this is a very Adventist, right? Like this is very Adventist. I don't know of any other denomination that has this idea. And so the thing that hit me, and if we want to jump right into this and skip the first two acts of the movie, the third act, so you have Earth, and half of the living, you know, half of all the humans are alive and living on Earth in this like dark period, basically, where everyone's trying to recover from all these loved ones. And it's very, everyone's kind of going through grief and those stages and that process, responding to it differently in anger or in depression. Captain America is trying to be active, right? It's just going through these different stages of grief. And anyway, in that, after they finally get the Infinity Stones, they bring everyone back. And this is where I think the parallels start coming. Like, everyone who's lived, or who lived during the snap, comes back to life in that moment. They don't show everyone then, but they kind of hint that they're back. And as that happens, Thanos, right after that moment, is coming down from the sky with basically his whole army, right, to destroy the Avengers and destroy all of humanity. And that's where it kind of started getting kind of creepy for me, because it's like, okay, everyone's coming back back to life. Someone coming from a higher being, coming from heaven, godlike figure coming from heaven.
Yeah, I think we need to clarify, because his plan the previous Avengers movie was to balance everything by killing half of all living beings. But here, Thanos is killed. That version of Thanos is killed in the first, 10 minutes of the movie. So basically, the entire rest of the movie Spoilers. Is the Avengers going to the past to find the Infinity Stones. But while they're in the past Thanos kind of realizes what's happening. So he travels to the present. Mm-hmm. And he decides that instead of killing half of humanity like he previously planned, he's going to completely destroy the universe and build it up again.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. Very good. And so again, that's where those parallels started for me. He's coming with his whole host of armies, coming to destroy the earth. He wants to create it brand new, right? And so then in that fight, everyone finally comes, like all the warriors of the earth basically come and start fighting Thanos and his armies. And they say, we're going to kill him properly this time, because he wants to create a brand new universe and he wants to create all things new. And the earth makes a stand. He rains fire from heaven. Literally, his ship starts raining down like fire to kill everyone down on earth, which I thought was really also revealing. And then finally, what ends up happening, the way the movie ends, again, spoiler warnings, is that in a moment of, I guess, trickery and clever engineering from Iron Man, who designs the new Infinity Gauntlet, his Infinity Glove based on his Stark tech, he kind of like swaps the stones on the gauntlet or the Iron Man glove that Thanos has stolen, and he swaps it to his own hand, and then he snaps his finger. And before he does that, he says, I am... And then he just like holds it, wait, And then he says, Iron Man. And then he, like, snaps his fingers, and then they all die. Like, Thanos and all his armies, everyone with Thanos, associated with Thanos, dies. And the Earth is good again. And so, anyway, I just... That hit me because, again, it's so many parallels to Evan's eschatology. And that kind of freaked me out in a theater. I'm not even going to lie. That really scared me. And I left, like, really quietly and sheepishly. And I was like, what have I just observed? You know, what have I just witnessed? Second time around, it wasn't as bad, but still. So, yeah. What do you think about that, man? What were your impressions on that?
So, my impressions with... I kind of thought of, like, the whole millennium and the Adventist eschatology. Well, after I watched it, because of course I'm watching it and it's super awesome because, you know, Captain America holds the hammer and he starts beating on Thanos and then everybody comes back and the final fight is amazing. But during that last fight, I suddenly remembered this. I told you about this, a painting I saw like when I was a kid, which was, you know, part of the Adventist eschatology is that after the 1,000 years where basically the righteous are up in heaven and Satan is just roaming the earth, mm-hmm. there is one final standoff between Satan and his angels and God and his angels, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I remember vividly in that painting, I saw on one side there's God with his angels, and on the other side there's also Satan with all the, you know, with Adolf Hitler, with Joseph Stalin, Mussolini, Ivan the Terrible, you know, all these. Like,
that is such a dark. Can I just appreciate how dark that painting is? Like,
yeah,
that's so scarring. Like, man. Anyway,
exactly. So I immediately started thinking, you know, these are all like the heroes of the entire universe, you know, because you got Ant-Man, you got Thor, Captain America, Iron Man, but you also got like the Guardians of the Galaxy, along with all their friends. You got all the other people who were in
Captain
Ant-Man.
Marvel, very much a cosmic
being. Exactly. So you got everybody who's ever been in one of these movies going against every other like Thanos kind of like minion that was in all the other
CGI
movies.
CGI army. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, I think it's like the army that came down from the first Avengers.
Well, that one and also the one from Infinity War. It's the same. That's like true. They combine those weird creatures.
So that image just popped into my head and I was kind of freaked out because of that. I was like, oh, wait. And then I started to draw a little, like, I didn't think of it exactly how you thought of it, but I rather think of, like, Thanos, like, how he was killed at the beginning of the movie. And he kind of spent this time, like, completely out of the picture throughout the, like, an entire 2/3 of the movie. But this, at the end, he kind of resurrects or, like, comes back to wreak havoc on the Avengers. So I just kind of thought of it in those terms that...
On the flip side.
Exactly.
That makes sense. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, in some sense, you know, if Jesus went back home after he left the earth to create a new place for us. I mean, Iron Man was home, right? And he devises a plan in order to get everyone back. So in some level, I think Iron Man is depicted as kind of like a Christ figure. Obviously, his sacrifice at the end there. And Thanos just kind of, at least in the beginning, very beginning of the movie, where he's just kind of off by himself in that garden, isolated from everyone after he, you know, devised this plan. I guess I can see those parallels. Like, it goes both ways. And again, movies never really, especially superhero movies, never really make a clear distinction as the Bible does, right? Like, exactly along biblical lines, but just kind of allude to it.
Yeah. So, another thing I kind of thought of while I was watching it is that it's significant that Iron Man was the one who made the final sacrifice, because as the movie frames it, he's the only one who could have made that sacrifice. Because in Christian soteriology, there is the concept that only the Son of God, only a human being who was sinless, could make the sacrifice for humanity's salvation. And that's why Jesus came down and he died on the cross, because he was a perfect and sinless being.
Just to clarify to some of our hearers, soteriology is basically the study of salvation. How does a religious system explain salvation for its adherents? So
yeah, exactly. So I thought of that. And in the movie, it's there's this part where... Actually, in Infinity War, Doctor Strange goes into the future and views possible scenarios about how all this is going to pan out. And I think he views like millions of possible scenarios. And then they ask him, so how many scenarios do we win? Do we survive? And he says, like, there's only one scenario where we survive. Mm-hmm. And when he comes back at the final battle here, Tony asks him, so is this the one where we survive? And he's like, you know, I can't tell you that yet.
Otherwise it won't happen.
But there's this one moment right before, like, yes, right when,
yes, I was just gonna say this,
right when Thanos punches Captain Marvel into last year, that Tony looks up at Doctor Strange, and Doctor Strange just like he just puts his finger up and he's like, yeah, this that now is the time, like, you're the only one,
this is the
this
one,
this is up, totally, yeah, up to you. And he kind of see Tony Stark, he has like this, you know, kind of like taking it in and like kind of like, yeah, realizing what he is about to do. And of course he tricks Thanos, he gets the Infinity Stones, which by the way, I think it's kind of a plot hole where in Infinity War Thanos had to make a special gauntlet to hold the Infinity Stones, but now just like Iron Man's armor is equal to the Infinity Gauntlet.
Yeah, what in the world? They have to go to like the elves to get this like super special thing, and then Iron Man's like, hold my beer, right? Like, you know.
Yeah, I guess.
Hold my root beer, like, and just like makes it very quickly off of like his tech.
They should have just gotten kind of an oven mitt with the Infinity Stones,
a bejeweled oven mitt.
Yeah, exactly. So
just enough to snap your fingers, you know, like the big part of the mitt and then like your thumb. So I want to switch gears, jumping on the salvation and soteriology train, and I want to go back in the movie to Vormir, which is the place where the Soul Stone resides, and Ronin or Hawkeye along with Black Widow, they're here with Natasha, they're here, and they're trying to get the stone, but they don't realize that they have to make a sacrifice. And, you know, this second time around that I was watching it, it really reminded me of the story of Abraham and Isaac. Because in the story of Abraham and Isaac, God asks Abraham to sacrifice the thing he loves the most, his son, basically. Mm-hmm. The thing that he really waited so long to get as a promise from God. And, you know, it was a miracle because he was too old to have kids and so was his wife. And now God is saying, sacrifice him. And in the movie, of course, again, if you haven't seen it, spoilers, Natasha sacrifices herself, which is the thing that supposedly Hawkeye loves the most, which I question that a little bit, but whatever. I think what happened is that Natasha is the last person
he loves like the most. Because he lost his wife and all his kids. Like, who's there left?
That makes sense. That makes sense. And he makes the sacrifice. And because of the sacrifice, you know, the plan of salvation for the earth, so to speak, can go on. And it just hit me because, you know, in the Jewish and the Christian understanding and narrative, at the point where Abraham is going to sacrifice his beloved son, God stops him, right? And provides a lamb. Is it a lamb? Mm-hmm. A ram.
A ram. Mm-hmm.
For him to sacrifice. And says God will provide, like, you know, because he said God will provide earlier. And then that lamb takes the spot of Isaac, and Isaac doesn't have to die. And in that moment, it was a symbol of the Lamb of God, Jesus, who would come later. And he was the son who was going to be sacrificed once and for all for the salvation of everyone. And so it just kind of hit me in that moment, right? Like, here's a parallel of Abraham and Isaac, but this is a very humanistic idea, right? Like, we do have to sacrifice ourselves or things that we love or our children or whatever sometimes in order to get the things that we want the most. But that's not the way God operates. He says, stop. You don't have to sacrifice each other, you know? That's also a very pagan idea. Like, you sacrifice your family members. But he says, stop. You don't have to do that. I'm the one who's going to bring that sacrifice. I'm the one who's going to sacrifice myself in order for you to have that salvation. And so it just kind of hit me. I try to use movies as a springboard for biblical themes. Mm-hmm. And I think that was one moment that really stood out to me in the movie, that scene. So
yeah, that's an interesting point. I hadn't thought of that. So yeah. Oh, also, like, last time when we talked about Infinity War, we talked about how kind of Thanos is like this perverted Christ figure. And I think you saw it a little bit more, but I saw it a little bit more at the beginning of the movie where you see Thanos is just like in his garden. And there's a few shots that are reminiscent of the movie Gladiator, which is like kind of the, mm-hmm. the classic mm-hmm. warrior hero. And but then also then Thanos has his armor. It's up on a pole and it's kind of like in a cross position. Yes, exactly.
Very
and
telling.
Even, you know, when the Avengers come and like, where are the stones? He's like, you guys should be grateful. You know, he actually mm-hmm. sounds like confused. Why are these guys like hitting me? You know, I've made life better for them.
Yeah, exactly. Like, what? Why would you be angry? Like, now everything's exactly. great in his mind.
So yeah. I think that carries over the themes from the last movie. Something else we touched on last time is that you mentioned that the point of how the gospel is carried around the world, it's kind of like a joint effort carried out by mm-hmm. missionaries, disciples, etc. And my argument was actually that the Avengers in the first one failed because they were separated. But simply here, because they were all together, they were all able to join together in that final fight, they were able to overcome Thanos. So mm-hmm. I think those themes carry over into Endgame. And I really like that. I like it when themes from past movies carry into this one. Another thing I appreciate mm-hmm. about that really hit me about the MCU is that the MCU is kind of, I kind of see some parallelism between the MCU as a whole and the Bible, where basically mm-hmm. in the Bible you have these individual stories about Adam, Abraham, Jacob, Samuel, Daniel, you know, all these different people. But in the end, there's this one event that frames the entire Bible. Which is the cross, yes. which is the story of Jesus. You notice that the entire Bible is before and after Jesus. And that kind of reminded me of Endgame, where mm-hmm. you kind of realize, since they go back to like the original Avengers, or they go back to Thor 2 or Guardians of the Galaxy, you realize that this is the culminating event of all these movies.
Nice. So the snap really becomes that defining event for the whole MCU, mm-hmm. the way that the cross and Jesus coming becomes the defining event for yeah. the Bible. That's good. Listen, Dido, unfortunately today I got to run. But if you had to sum up like the themes in this movie, the theological themes of this movie that stood out to you, what would be, you know, what would you say is the way to sum up the themes in this movie? What's this movie about?
This movie is mainly about recognizing flawed characters, but how together, acknowledging those flaws, we can overcome like the greatest evil sometimes. Because
I like
that's one of the things, like, you know, throughout this entire movie, like, Thor is extremely flawed, so is Iron Man, Captain America, and they have like unresolved issues.
Fat Thor, yeah.
Exactly.
Just to clarify, I wasn't laughing at Fat Thor because he's fat. I'm just laughing at Fat Thor because the way they depicted him. I'm not trying to shame anyone out there. Just throwing that out there.
No, Chris Hemsworth is just hilarious.
He's a great actor. Man.
All right, guys. Well, thank you for joining us on this episode of Cinema Theology. Subscribe to
We'll have a mystery movie next time, so come ready. Yeah, we don't even know what it is. It's not much of a mystery.
Yeah, I guess. Okay, we'll see you guys next time. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter. If you appreciate this episode, you think somebody else might be interested, please share. We'd love to get this out to more listeners.
And continue the conversation.
Yeah, exactly.
If you have questions or movie suggestions for us, drop it on Facebook, Twitter, or send us an email, cinematheology@gmail.com. And just say, hey, I want to hear about this movie, or hear my thoughts on your last episode, whatever. We'd love to get feedback. That way we can kind of speak more to some of the things that you are thinking and processing as well.
Yeah, and if you have your own thoughts on Endgame, please comment them.
Yes, and with that, I think we're going to sign off. Thank you so much for listening today, and we'll catch you in the next episode.